Will Public Health please come to order? Secretary, will you please take the roll?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Vice Chair Glynn.
Here.
Vice Chair Gross.
Here.
Senator Heinbach.
Here.
Senator Keegan.
Excused.
Senator McGilvray.
Here.
Senator McNally.
Here.
Senator Molnar.
Excused.
Senator Sands.
She will be joining us shortly.
Chairman Howard.
Here.
Thank you.
First, what we'll be doing, we're waiting on the House to finish. We'll do executive action on Senate Bill 33 and Senate Bill 43. Senator McNally, if you don't mind, we'll start with yours. And Vice Chair Glynn, would you open?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move to pass Senate Bill 33.
Is there any discussion or any amendments? No amendments?
There aren't any amendments. Mr. Chair, just to refresh everyone's memory, this is the bill came out of the Interim Families Committee, and it requires 30 days notification instead of the current 10 for people on the Big Sky waiver who are being terminated. And we heard testimony. I don't think there were any opponents, but this doesn't prevent someone from being terminated, but it would go a long way towards giving people a chance to correct misunderstandings if that's what's behind the action. So that's what it does.
Any other discussion?
Question.
All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, say no. It passed unanimously, and there is a couple of proxies.
Senator Molnar votes aye by proxy. Senator Keenan votes aye by proxy.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you. The bill passed unanimously. Our Senate Bill 33 passed unanimously. We'll move on to Senate Bill 43. We'll open the executive action. Is there a motion?
Mr. Chairman, I move to pass on Senate Bill 43.
Is there any discussion?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Senator. Diane Sands, Senator Sands. I'll get it yet here.
Thank you, my dear Mr. Chairman. Diane Sands here. This is one of the bills that, again, came from Children, Families, Health, and Human Services, unanimously out of that committee. I think the simplest way to explain this is that there are really three levels of decision-making that go on in the Department of Health and Human Services. One is, when we make a statutory provision for something, that's the highest level. But we usually, through rulemaking, give the department the authority to draft rules to implement what we've decided as strategy. And then below that is the issue of policy, which is much more detailed and thicker. So what we have heard here relative to the home and community-based waiver services, again, is where perhaps a new employee came in and decides to change the policy at the policy level, what the criteria for some service might be. And then when it's appealed, it's found to be not consistent with the way the department under rulemaking has or under statute has consistently provided that service. So what this bill does is say that when there are substantive changes affecting home and community-based waiver services or eligibility requirements, that they have to do it through rulemaking. And what that means is the public gets to have input. There's a hearing. People get to talk about it who are affected by the program. So it brings transparency, some accountability, and it lets people know, am I going to lose this service? Are we going to get this service? They have the notice that's provided. And then so that eliminates sort of the factor of individual perks of an individual who might be working for the program who decides that the criteria should be applied in a slightly different way. So with that, I mean, that was a concern of the entire interim committee, and this bill comes forward to us from the interim committee. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Is there any further discussion?
Question.
Let's go ahead and just take a voice vote. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed say no.
Senator Keenan votes aye by proxy.
Bill passed unanimously.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Well, committee, because we're kind of waiting on the House to finish, I think what we'll do is take a 10-minute break and come back here at 20 minutes after.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good thing you heard.
Have amendments on them. And Harry told us to hold his.
Want me to get Rod's attention? Can I get Rod's attention, or is he?
I hope so.
He should pick a better channel, because that one doesn't sound very good. You're being ridiculed. Yep. Yep. Heckled.
It's called friendly harassment.
Boy, you hit the nail on the head there. But don't tell anybody. All right. Then we have to be professional here. Okay.
Will public health please come to order? Since we are still waiting on the House, we're going to go ahead and do the executive action on Senate Bill 108. Will you open?
Mr. Chairman, could you give us the short title of that, please?
Boy, can you do that?
I can. I'll do it when I move it. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move due pass on Senate Bill 108, the bill for an act entitled the Act Generally Revising Laws Related to Local Boards of Health. That get you good enough?
Yep.
So I can describe just a little bit more that this is the one where the Board of Health would have to go to the local governing body to get approval for for decisions that they're making and policies that they're implementing.
Is there any comments from the committee? Any discussion?
Yes.
Senator, what?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Glim.
I move that Senate Bill 108 be amended with SB 108.1.1. This amendment just adds in the same language with the approval of the local majority of the local governing body for the paragraph that starts on line 24 on page 4. So page 4, line 24, it'll add in with the approval of the majority of the local governing body. So it basically does the same thing what we've done in the back on that back section, but it applies it to this this section, which has to do with standards for the control and disposal of sewage, so basically septic systems and such.
Is there any discussion on the amendment, Senator Gross?
Mr. Chairman, I don't have a copy of the amendment.
It should be in your packet.
Thank you. And if I could have just a moment to take a look, please, Mr. Chairman.
Any other discussion? Senator Sands.
Mr. Chairman, I refer back to the comments by the Missoula County Board of Health, particularly that this issues such as sewage and those kinds of issues are very time sensitive. And it's imperative that the City County Health Board, which is appointed by elected officials and elected officials do serve on it, that they don't have to go back to a regularly scheduled and publicly noticed meeting of the county commissioners to address an emergency sewage system. And so, I mean, that's the problem with the bill overall, but this amendment also addresses that issue, and I'm going to oppose it, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you for that. Any further discussion? Senator Glim.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like to point out that both with both sections, both this sewage section and the regular section, that it just says that those policies have to be approved by that local governing board. So as long as they work it out ahead of time, there's nothing that prevents the health official from making a shutdown or something. So say somebody's sewage is backing up in a restaurant or something like that, they could shut them down because that would be something that they would have as established policy already. And the local governing board would have approved that. And so it's not like this keeps them from making a new one up on the fly and having it implemented when the local governing board hasn't had a say in it and they haven't had the chance to present it to them.
Follow up. Any questions about that, Mr. Chairman?
Yes. Senator Sands?
The senator, so but what this is saying is that, again, the county board of health, whatever it is called in your locale, can't adopt policies relative to sewage unless that whole policy has gone to the county commissioners for approval. Is that what it's saying?
Correct.
So I still continue to object to that because what it's really saying is that every single policy that a health department might have no longer can just be discussed, approved by a health board, which does include reviews, legally constituted from appointments by elected officials serve on it, but every single policy still has to go back to the originating a board, such as a county commissioners, for approval. And I'm not going to make a bad bill better, so I'm still going to vote no.
Senator Monar.
Mr. Chairman, I'll throw this out to whoever wants it. Senator Sands makes a good point. Let's assume, and I think it's easy, they take all their policies they currently have written down, go to the commission meeting, and move them in mass. Everybody's read them. They adopt them. There's nothing big in there about sewage, I'm pretty sure. What happens if there's something new, an outbreak of fleas or something that's not in there that needs to be adopted? If it's a new thing that hasn't had a policy but should be addressed quickly, is there anything in this bill or existing law that allows for an emergency action that then will be reviewed by the governing body during their regular or a special meeting?
In my reading of the bill, and I'm not an expert on it, but my reading on it, is that there would be nothing, because they would have in their procedures emergency type situations that when the unknown comes up, we get to act. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's exactly what almost all of these do, as far as I understand. Senator Glenn. Did you have a comment?
Senator Molnar, Mr. Chairman, I would probably agree and say then that whatever decision that they do make in that emergency situation then probably has to go back and be approved if it's, you know, different, and that it doesn't just live on as and that's kind of the instigator, right? Health officials have made rulings and they've never gotten to be checked now during this pandemic by anybody who's an elected official. And so this is to put a check in for that.
So then, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Glimm, Senator Glimm, anyone else? So then, to make sure I understand this correctly, if in their procedures that are adopted, there is an emergency capacity to address a situation, but then that particular thing would be codified should it happen again. But there is no preclusion to an emergency action in an emergency situation.
I don't believe there would be if that's how they chose to set that up, and we maybe should consult with Ms. Hawk and see if she has an opinion.
Mr. Chair, Vice Chair Glimm, I agree with how you phrased it, Vice Chair Glimm, that if that's how the approved regulations were phrased, that there was some sort of exception for emergent situations. In that case, the authority would be able to act. I don't know what would happen then as far as circling back, if that would be, again, something that had to be baked into those regulations that were approved.
I want to apologize to the committee because I let this, we're on the amendment, and I let this go into the bill.
Mm-hmm.
So let's stay on the amendment for this moment, and then what we'll do is we'll vote on the amendment, and we'll go back to the bill.
And I apologize for going into the bill.
Well, that's all right. It was my fault. I was taken right along with you. Any other comments on the amendment?
Question.
Question on the committee. Let's take a roll call vote.
Vice Chair Glimm?
Yes.
Vice Chair Gross?
No.
Senator Heinbach?
Yes.
Senator Keegan?
Yes, by proxy.
Senator McGillivray?
Yes.
Senator McNally?
No.
Senator Molnar?
Yes.
Senator Sands?
No.
Chairman Howard?
Yes.
Mr. Chair, 6 members have voted aye, 3 have voted no.
The amendment passes. Now, further discussion on the bill.
Move the bill.
Did you have
Chair?
Mr. Chairman, I move House Bill 108 as amended.
Thank you. We're gonna get into the swing of things sooner or later. Senator Gross.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And yeah, I'll just speak to the bill as amended. I still have concerns. I think Senator Molnar's question was well put. I still have questions about, I don't see anything in the bill about public notice periods for public meetings, for local governments to take action. I still have concerns that this would limit communities' ability to respond to an emergency. I don't see a mechanism in this bill. I know there's another bill in the House very similar to this, and I'm not confident that the bill we're looking at today would allow orders under a declared emergency to remain in place until rescinded or modified. So I will be a no on the bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Further discussion, Senator McGillivray.
Mr. Chairman, I'll be yes on this. And just here's how I see this bill, page 5, section 2. With the approval of a majority of the local governing body, local boards of health may, and then it gives you this long list of things they can do. And the way I see it is working much the way it works today. And they discuss this, there's rules made, regulations made, and the local health officials are pretty much going on as business as usual until you hit a situation like we've experienced with COVID. Then we've got to say, time out. Let's have a discussion on this issue. It's out of the ordinary. It's not a normal. I mean, it's kind of a 100-year event, to say that. But I don't see anything that would prohibit the local governing health boards and authorities just dealing with the urgent, exigent things that come up on a regular basis. I don't see any problem here at all.
Further discussion? Call the questions?
Question.
No.
I'm sorry. Oh, Senator McNally, I'm sorry. I'm going to get used to this hand thing here pretty quick. Okay. Apologize for that.
Didn't want you to call the question yet. I have some general concerns, and a lot of it is I don't think the language, I think there's a lot of confusion in the language in the bill. And I think that was apparent from the testimony we heard from people like Mr. Russell, the health officer from Flathead County, years of experience, was gone and now it's back. And he, was like, what's the meaning of a local governing body? Section 2, violated privacy, is unresponsive. We had a city county commissioner, Pete Silverbow, who came in and said thought it was misguided, would have unintended consequences. My understanding is that a lot of locally elected officials, I'm quite sure, and maybe Senator McGillivray can correct me, but I'm pretty sure that there's at least a county commissioner from Yellowstone County on the health board. So it's not that there aren't any elected officials in the conversation. They are in the conversation. I also agree with Senator McGillivray that I think we're talking about changing public health institutions run by people with knowledge of public health because of a once-in-a-lifetime occurrence. And, this is obviously COVID. Was very unusual, and hopefully we don't have another thing like this again. But I think it's a mistake to upend an institution that's run by professionals and is very important in protecting public well-being and public health and putting it back in a political context. So we had a lot of good testimony about this, and very little of it was in support. And there was a lot of confusion in this bill that the one amendment cannot clear up. So I'm a no. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, if I could just beg your permission to speak one more time.
Yes, sir.
I didn't mean to say that because there's a quirky thing that comes along once in a century that everything is like that. Because this bill comes from Senator Kerry. He had a similar bill last session because the public health officials made a ruling that you could not smoke within, I don't remember the exact number, 15 or 20 feet of a business establishment, and that was a big consternation to businesses, and the county elected officials had no say. So this is just not a big thing like COVID, but there are other times when the county health official, it's not always in the best interest of a business and the economy for having a public health official in charge of everything with fiat sovereign authority. Well, I'm going to support this bill. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Sands.
I've got to clarify here. The public health officers are appointed by the boards of county health, which are under the authority of county commissioners. Rules and proposals are not made arbitrarily by a county health official. They go before county health boards. Every county has one. And usually a county commissioner serves on that board as well. They have public hearings on rules. They have public input. They have expert input when they adopt these policies. This is not the idea of a rogue county health officer out there doing something outside of the normal process that has worked for over 100 years. This is not broken. Let's not muck with it. If you think it is, maybe it's appropriate for a study bill. But the people that came and testified said, there really isn't a problem with the way it runs. So let's not shoot ourselves in the foot for something we don't need to do. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Heinbaum.
Question.
Question's been called on the bill as amended. Please take a roll call vote.
Vice Chair Glynn.
Yes.
Vice Chair Gross.
No.
Senator Heinbaum.
Yes.
Senator Keegan.
Yes, by proxy.
Senator McGilvray?
Yes.
Senator McNally?
No.
Senator Molnar?
Yes.
Senator Sands?
No.
Chairman Howard?
Yes.
Mr. Chair, 6 members have voted aye, 3 have voted no.
The bill is passed as amended. Now we're going to go to hearing House Bill 60. Representative Lenz, would you like to open on your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of, Public Health, Welfare, and Safety.
I just wanted to tell you, we have an unwritten rule. If you're an hour late, you have to buy dinner.
I'm not really late. I'm not actually here, Mr. Chair.
Go right ahead. I'm sorry.
I got here as fast as I could, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee. Apologize for our tardiness. We like to talk on the House. So House Bill 60 primarily is aligning language with the Family First Prevention Act. Family First Prevention Services Act is something that I've shown an interest in, kind of followed a little bit, though I do have a hesitancy to think that any government program is going to change the world. But I think that this has the ability to shore up families, to prevent removal of children. And I think because of this federal act, that then maybe it could help change the culture in the Department of Public Health and Human Services. So what this bill simply does is, and it will be mostly addressed on page 3 of definitions, number 10. Instead of family group decision making, the change will be made to change it to align with this act, family engagement meetings. And on page 5, instead of on line 11, 22B, in place of voluntary protective services, it would replace it with the term written prevention plan. Of course, this is within the definitions. If you need me to expand on that, I can. I know the department will be here to talk about what this also looks for implementing. Ongoing on this, the rest of the bill just touch on those two items where it touches in the code. So I await your questions. Thank you.
Thank you. We're going to go to further proponents, and please be very succinct and to the point. Further proponents. Please state your name and spell your last name.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Matt Kuntz. I'm the executive director for NAMI Montana. We're a grassroots organization that support, educate, and advocate for Montanans who live with mental illness and their families. And we're delighted to support this bill, one of kind of a package.
And spell your last name.
Oh,
sir.
I'm sorry. K-U-N-T-Z. I usually figure that out by February, but I'm not sure that's going to happen this year.
We're all new right now.
So this is kind of a package of bills, and we're really grateful to Representative Lentz for bringing it forward. We do really like the idea of if you could get a family in treatment, if you could take care of some of their issues, the child's not going to be stuck in foster care forever. It's a really great concept. This was developed, the act itself on the federal level was bipartisan and signed by President Trump. And so we do really believe in this concept. I worked with a family this morning that I think this would have made sense for. So we're really for it. And I guess I just want to say that last week when our new DPHHS administrator was named, I think that there was an awful lot of Googling about Kentucky healthcare, and I was one of them, and they were bragging how they wanted to be one of the first in the country to implement this federal legislation. So I do think that it's consistent with the direction that this administration is taking as well. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee.
Thank you. Further proponents? Is there any further proponents? Is there any opponents? Is there any opponents?
Mr. Chair, I'm sorry to interrupt, but we have one proponent online.
Okay. Please state your name and spell your last name. And you are? Yeah. Okay.
Good afternoon, Chairman Howard and committee members. For the record, my name is Nikki Grossberg, and it's spelled N-I-K-K-I-G-R-O-S-S-B-E-R-G, and I'm the Deputy Division Administrator for the Department of Public Health and Human Services, Child and Family Services Division. Apologize, I was not able to be there in person today, but wanted to thank Representative Lentz for his sponsorship of House Bill 60, and thank committee members for your time today. This bill aligns terminology in Title 41, Part 3 with the Families First Prevention Services Act. The legislation will offer clarity surrounding a written prevention plan, which is an important tool that is leveraged to help keep children in their home settings whenever possible that we can do this safely. By aligning terminology in the state statute with current policy and procedures, agency staff, families, providers, and system partners will have a greater clarity regarding our division's intent and responsibility for providing prevention services to families to prevent removal from children from their homes if at all possible. The aligning of the terminology provides for consistency and is important as we work to improve our efforts to support families and maintain children safely in their homes, if possible, when abuse and neglect has occurred. But better yet, our goal is to provide prevention services prior to the abuse and neglect occurring, which is in the best interest of the children. So thank you, Chairman Howard and committee members, for your consideration of this bill.
Thank you. It's my understanding there's no further proponents. Is there any opponents? No opponents. Is there any informational witnesses? There's no informational witnesses. Committee, I'm going to put the question to you, but we have one more bill to run today. Just please be very succinct in your questions. Senator Sands.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A question for Ms. Grossberg. Mr. Chairman, Ms. Grossberg, you know, we talk about this changing the terminology here, but it isn't really a question of just changing terminology. Could you elaborate a little bit? I know from work with Family First, et cetera, it's a change in the approach of how the department intends to work with people. Instead of the prevalence or the preference as stated in the existing law for the removal of children for abuse and neglect, this changes the focus and the commitment of the department to work to keep those families intact, provide the services to keep people on their jobs and the families more functional. Is that not a more correct way to present and talk about this bill?
Chairman Howe, Senator Sands, yes, you're exactly right. You summed that up terrifically.
Can I follow up, Mr. Chairman? Could I ask, how long has the department been working on implementing this? Because I know this isn't something that's going to happen. This is something you are already doing. Could you just give us a couple sentences about that, please?
Sure. Chairman Howard and Senator Sands, you are exactly correct. We have been working on implementation of this since it's been passed. We've always had the opportunity to provide voluntary services agreements and prevention services to families. But what this act did is really allow us to put some focus on doing that prevention work and really aligning services and language across different providers and agencies to really recognize the importance of preventing removal if at all possible.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Representative Lenz, would you like to close on your bill?
Thank you, members of the committee, Mr. Chair. I appreciate it very much. It was touched on in the testimony of what we're hopeful that this act can do, because structurally, that's something I think is very important for this state. We are leading, if not in the top two or three, regularly for child removals. And if this can help, I'm all on board with it. This just kind of changes some language to align that. And with that, I thank you for your consideration.
Thank you. This closes the hearing on House Bill 60. Is Representative Welch here? Senator Representative Welch. Representative Welch, would you like to open on your bill? With House Bill 38.
I would love to open on my bill, Senators. Let me get organized here for a second. I just walked down. Chairman, members of the Senate Public Health Committee, for the record, my name is Representative Tom Welch, last name spelled W-E-L-C-H. I'm here today to talk to you about House Bill 38, and I'll give you a quick version on this, if you will, and then I believe we should have a couple of proponents online anyway. House Bill 38 came out of the Children, Family, Health, Human Services Interim Committee. We were assigned with a study of long-term and senior care division of Department of Public Health and Human Services. One of the issues in the study were some negative changes in the way that the division conducted its Big Sky Waiver program. These changes began roughly about 6 years ago, and with the change in leadership in the division. They continued through for a number of years to the current time that when the interim committee was meeting. House Bill 38 was one of four bills that we supported as an interim committee to address and reverse some of these changes. What does this bill do? It restores the interpretation of providing services and equipment to very physically disabled people on the Big Sky waiver that were in place prior to these administrative changes 6 years ago. I want to just briefly touch on waivers. Waivers are state programs that are provided to people with disabilities who qualify for Medicaid. They're for people who otherwise may have to live in institutions such as nursing homes or state facilities because their disabilities are so substantial. Waivers provide services for people to avoid these expensive placements and live at home instead. The waiver services are almost always less expensive than institutionalized care. The Big Sky waiver is for people with physical abilities from infants through seniors. Up until about 6 years ago, people with disabilities who were on the Big Sky waiver were able to receive services and equipment that together diverted them from institutional placements. The new interpretation changed this and required people to prove that each individual service or piece of equipment alone kept them from having to live in an institution. This is extraordinarily difficult to prove, and people were denied important services and equipment under this new interpretation. This bill would establish that it is the intent of the legislature that the department shall review whether the service and equipment recommended by medical professionals will collectively, not individually, prevent an individual from requiring an institutional level of care. Something we might be talking about, for example, is a gymnasium membership to help someone out. It would also direct the department to approve each waiver service or item of medical equipment that will continue to allow a person to remain in a home or community setting, even if the service or item on its own would not prevent an institutional level of care. The division has reached out and has made some changes since this bill came out of the interim committee. And we have to recognize that they have started to move forward and make some steps along those directions. But I'll stand for questions, and we'll let the other people visit, and then I'll wrap up at the end. Thank you.
Thank you. We will move to proponents in the room. Is there any proponents? And please state your name and keep it to the point. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chairman Howard, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Adrienne Cotton, C-O-T-T-O-N, here representing the Montana Area Agencies on Aging Association, known as M4A. M4A is a private nonprofit organization that represents the 10 leading providers of services for older Montanans across the state. And I'm also here representing AARP Montana, with more than 145,000 members statewide, aged 50 and older. Home and community-based service waivers allow people to age at home in their communities and surrounded by the people they love. By establishing the legislative intent laid out within this bill, you ensure waivers are targeted for those whom the need is the greatest. The average cost of a nursing home in Montana is $84,000 per year, a cost that is either an incredible burden on the individual or that increases reliance upon the state. House Bill 38 prioritizes fiscally responsible service delivery for the state while simultaneously ensuring that aging Montanans' hard-earned money stretches further. By utilizing waivers to avoid institutionalization, we ensure that older Montanans control where they live and the services they receive. This bill ensures older Montanans can work, earn money, and continue to participate in community life. Maggie Kuhn, who famously advocated the value of older adults, pushed for nursing home reform, and celebrated aging until she passed away in 1995 at age 90, coined support for this bill well. Maggie said, "Old age does not necessitate separation from society. We hope you support this bill, thereby supporting the individual freedoms of the adults who help shape the Montana we live in today by allowing those folks to live among us in the community." Thank you.
Thank you. Further proponents?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Matt Kuntz, K-U-N-T-Z. I'm the executive director for NAMI Montana. We're a grassroots organization that supports, educates, and advocates for Montanans who live with mental illness and their family, and we are delighted to support this bill. As been described before, it's the same thing that we've seen, is that it's often a combination of things that leads to an institutionalization, and people would love to stay at home, but it's one thing here, one thing there, and it really, the math has to be done on that combination. For instance, there was one man that we were working with during the holiday season, and he had some noisy neighbors move in, which wouldn't have been a problem for me, but with his schizophrenia, that triggered his voices. He couldn't sleep. And eventually his housing was threatened. And it was something as simple as noise canceling headphones to give him a little bit more peace that allowed him to tackle some of the other issues with his neighbors. Or one other woman that I help out has Alzheimer's disease, and she's been able to stay in her home. But the one thing that she's scared of is the snow shoveling, which hasn't been a big issue this year, but in her housing community in Bozeman, she's in charge of shoveling the snow. And the last thing that any of us wants is for her to end up in an expensive nursing care facility because she can't take care of that one little task that happens a few times every week. So we are really grateful for this bill. And Mr. Chair, I would ask to be able to leave early if possible. I promise I was here an extra hour early.
Thank you very much. Further proponents? Is there any further proponents in the room? We're going to go to the sign-in, the Zoom, and the first proponent would be Beth Brenneman. Please state your name, and please be very succinct in your testimony.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Mr. Chairman knows me well. I can attempt to talk.
We can barely hear you.
Oh, excuse me. I'm very close to the mic.
It's better now.
Okay, great. I'll continue. Beth Brenneman from Disability Rights Montana, and we thank the sponsor as well as the interim committee for bringing this bill. This is Bill 3 that you've heard about, the Big Sky Waiver Program in particular, though it does apply to all three disability waivers. We haven't seen the problems in the psychiatric waiver or the DD waiver that we've seen in the Big Sky Waiver, which is why we talk about that one so much, but it is pretty critical to provide all of the services together in order to help somebody convert from an institutional placement. And in fact, it is required by federal law. And so this legislative intent would get us consistent with federal law and would help a lot of people who, as you know, we have had to help in appeals, who have had their services or equipment denied because it on its own did not keep them out of an institution. So we hope that you support the bill. Thank you very much.
Thank you. The next proponent is, Shyla Patera. Please don't go over 3 or 4 minutes. I'll give you 3 or 4 minutes. Thank you.
Actually, Chair Howard and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Shyla Patera, spelled S-H-Y-L-A-P-A-T-E-R-A, and my independent living center, North Central Independent Living Services, supports this bill. It would help many of our consumers achieve their goals of staying in our community, and we definitely support that. As you heard from Ms. Brenneman, waivers of all types, including the Big Sky waiver and the other two DD and AMDD waivers, are designed specifically to help people with disabilities and older adults stay in our homes. And we have tried to ask the department not to single out one service or piece of equipment that keeps people from, or that would prevent an institutionalization, but any consumer that requests a service which is paid for by the waivers, all of those services are necessary for community living. So we heartily support House Bill 38, and we thank Representative Welch and the interim committee for bringing it forward.
Thank you
so much for your time.
Thank you. The next proponent is Travis Hoffman. You have 3 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And since I know you're all going to vote yes on this bill, I will be brief. For the record, Travis Hoffman, that's H-O-F-F-M-A-N. I am the advocacy coordinator at Summit Independent Living. I am also testifying on behalf of Joel Peden, who is with the Montana Association of Centers for Independent Living, representing Summit in Missoula, Montana Independent Living Project in Helena, and Living Independently for Today and Tomorrow in Billings. We are the three other Centers for Independent Living besides the one you just heard about from Shyla. So this bill, basically, you've already heard it, clarifies that all services must be looked at together as being able to prevent somebody from having to be placed in a nursing home or a more costly congregate care setting, the state hospital, whatever other institutional setting might be there. And so an example would be, I use waiver services. I have a spinal cord injury, so I use a wheelchair to transfer. I have a Hoyer to shower. I have a shower chair to brush my teeth. I have a splint that goes my arm so I can independently brush my teeth. None of those singular items are going to keep me out of a nursing home, but together, in combination with my personal assistance services and the nursing services that I require to be able to utilize the bathroom. When you look at all of those together, and they work holistically, they keep me out of an institution. They keep thousands of other Montanans out of institutions. And it's very rare that you're going to find one single item or one single service that's going to do that for any particular person. There's a wide variety of things that many people with significant disabilities require to make it so that they can pursue their educational goals, their employment goals, interact socially with their family, go to church, what have you, basically just live life. So this bill, you've already passed a couple others out of this committee, I believe unanimously, and we ask that you do the same with this one. Thank you.
Thank you. There's no more Zoom proponents. Is there any opponents in the room? Is there any opponents? There is one Zoom informational witness, Marie Matthews. Would you introduce yourself?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Marie Matthews, M-A-T-T-H-E-W-S. I am the Medicaid and Health Services Branch Manager for the Department of Public Health and Human Services. As part of that, I am your State Medicaid Director. I am here for questions.
Thank you very much. Is there any questions from the committee? Senator Glenn.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For Ms. Matthews. Ms. Matthews, so we have this bill before us, and as Mr. Hoffman described in his situation, he has a number of different things that put together help him to live independently with some help. Can you explain why how he's able to do that without the bill? Because it seems like he's already doing it, right?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, there have been some cases where there was at least conversations about decisions being about whether or not an additional item was necessary as part of the care plan and whether it was necessary to keep someone out of an institution. Ms. Brenneman is absolutely correct. This is required. This is how we are operating the program. I think that there have been some cases that have caused some concern, and this bill would reiterate your expectation on the program, sir.
Thank you. Senator Gross.
Thank you. One follow-up, Mr. Chairman, for Ms. Matthews. Since federal law does require us to take a more holistic approach in looking at if a piece of equipment were to be added, if we didn't pass this law and if we were to deny someone a piece of equipment, would we be liable? Could we be sued?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I feel like we can be sued on many things. I would say that if we denied individuals, the criteria is they have to be a nursing home level of care. They need to, a service available on the waiver needs to be necessary for their care. And their entire service package should help them stay living in the community. If we weren't to adhere to those basic tenets of the program, we would be in violation of our waiver at a minimum. And I think I'll stop there, sir, ma'am.
That'll be all with the questions. Representative Welsh, would you like to close on your bill? And your name, ma'am, you're an informational witness? Okay.
I have a spinal cord injury of over 30 years. I moved back to Montana a couple years ago, and I applied for the Big Sky. For individuals to respond for additional information. I failed to meet the 10-day turnaround time and had to appeal and subsequently qualify for this study. I got on another waiver. I met with an occupational therapist and she came to my home with numerous recommendations. I went for all the recommendations meant before. Some of them, and I had to go back and appeal. So the program, the way it stands now, even with recommendations, items are being denied, people are having to appeal them.
Mr. Chair, I'm so sorry to interrupt the witness. None of us, is the microphone on? Nobody online can hear her.
We can hear her in the committee. I don't know if the microphone is on or not.
Oh, sorry, yeah. I apologize.
Ma'am, you are a proponent of this bill, are you not?
I am in support of this bill.
I'm going to list you as a proponent.
Thank
you very much.
Thank you, and I also want to state, for me to be eligible for a waiver in Montana, because I receive SSDI, I have to meet a work requirement. I have to work a minimum of 1 hour a month. I have to meet a resource verification, and I also have to meet a spend down to be eligible
for the waiver, and I'll testify further about some of those requirements for waiver at a later date. But thank you for letting me share my experience.
Thank you for sharing. Representative Welsh, would you like to now close on your bill?
You bet. Thank you, Chairman Howard. Members of the committee, I thank you for a good, quick hearing. I'm going to close with this one thing. I've used it. Someone asked me why I decided to carry this bill, and bear with me for just a minute, and I'll get through this. But one child was denied equipment under this policy. She had no arms and wanted simply to eat independently at school with her friends. The independent feeding machine does not by itself keep her out of an institution. So it was denied. She had to appeal to get the equipment. Fortunately, her family were able to find an attorney to represent them, and the decision was reversed. This young lady now is able to have some quality time in her life. That's why I'm carrying this bill. That's why I'm asking you to pass this bill. And again, I will recognize that the department has come a long ways, and I appreciate their efforts along these lines too. So thank you very much, and good evening.
Good evening. This closes the hearing on House Bill 38. Committee, I wanted to put something to you. Is there anyone here that would object to us doing executive action on both of these bills?
Mr. Chairman, I don't object, but I do want to point out to the committee, these are examples of the importance of the way the interim committee process works. You know, that in the process of that, it's a place where we hear kind of appeals from people in the public or our institutions and providers about what works and what doesn't work, that require legislative involvement to improve the process, to be efficient and transparent. And so these packages of bills that are coming out from the interim committees have had hours of conversation in the interim committees and been refined. And I think that's why they have such strong support. And I really want to commend interim committees to those of you who've never served on one to think about serving on one, because this is where you really come to engage the administrative departments and how they work, as well as providing services and listening to our constituents about how to make these services more efficient and to work better for people. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. We will move to executive action, and we'll open executive action on House Bill 60.
Mr. Chairman, I move do pass on House Bill 60.
Is there any discussion? Question? Somebody call question?
Do concur. Question.
Question. I think we can take a voice vote. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? No. No one is opposed. The bill is passed unanimously.
Senator Keenan votes aye by proxy.
Mr. Chairman, do we need to designate a person, a senator, to carry this on the floor?
Yes.
Any volunteers before I assign somebody?
Mr. Chairman, I would volunteer Senator Sands or McNally. One of the, maybe perhaps one of them who served on the interim committee.
Probably a good idea, but I think there's several people in the room. Whatever the chairman wishes.
The minority vice chair wishes. Senator Sands. It's assigned to Senator Sands.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll do my best.
Next, we'll open executive action on House Bill 38.
Mr. Chairman, I move House Bill 38 do concur.
Is there any discussion?
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, sir.
I just had a question. One of the witnesses brought up a 10-day period of waiting or response time, and I didn't see that in this bill, so I'm wondering if it's on some other issue.
I actually think she misunderstood a different bill that we were doing. I don't think it has any application to this bill.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I believe Ms. Lytle, I think her name was just using that to highlight her experience in applying for the waiver and the appeal process. Yeah, the language isn't included in the new section here in the bill, but I think it was to help the committee understand some of the difficulties that folks experience in applying for these waivers. Mr. Chairman.
Any further discussion?
Question.
Question has been called. We will have a voice vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed say no.
Senator Keenan votes aye by proxy.
The bill has passed unanimously.
Mr. Chairman, I suggest that Senator McNally carry this, as the other person who's carrying these packages of bills that deal with these issues within the department.
I think that is an excellent idea. Senator McNally.
Okay. Thanks, Diane.
Is there any other business? Public health is meeting is over.